welcome to another episode of North American Deer Talk, where the fusion of facts and opinions become the education and entertainment for all. This is your host, Josh Newton, and we have another great show for you today. Hi, folks, and welcome back to another show. Glad you could join us today. It is October 3rd. It is a cold, wet, dreary day here in north central Pennsylvania. I think when I got up this morning, it was it was in the low 40s, and there was a good amount of rain coming down. It's just been raining all day, so figured it would be a good time to do a podcast for you. I do want to welcome our newest sponsor to the NADT, North American Deer Talk, and that is the PADFA, or the Pennsylvania Deer Farmers Association. I had actually donated a corporate sponsorship to them. I do sit on the board for the PDFA as the treasurer on the executive committee, and just want to thank everybody over there for all the hard work that they do for taking care of the association, putting on some great events and helping to keep deer farming alive and well in Pennsylvania. So we'll go ahead and I'll tell you a little bit about the PDFA and kind of what their mission is. Over the past 10 years, the PDFA has striven to provide educational opportunities for its members through sharing of informative information to the general public to educate them about our growing cervid industry. They also have a collective voice in our state's capital, which is Harrisburg, PA, and other governmental and issues that benefit our cervid industry. The PDFA has always put forth promotion of the highest ethical standards in the care, handling, and harvesting of Pennsylvania cervids. So that would include your elk, your mule deer, your sitkas, fallows, etc. All those good deer species that we all love. In closing, we insist that our membership operate legal, honest, and forthright operations in conjunction with fellow members, cervid producers, and the general public. The PDFA will continue to work diligently to improve our great cervid industry within our state and expand opportunities for its membership to prosper in the future. So that pretty much sums up the PDFA. They're a great organization. If you want to learn more about them, you can go to www.padfa.com. Go over to their website. You can click on the membership link over there and get into being a member of the PDFA and helping support Pennsylvania in their deer raising efforts. Our next sponsor is going to be Cervid Solutions. Obviously, they're the people that put on this show. That's a company that I run over there, and we have just an excellent program that we've been developing, and just want to let everybody know that fall is really an excellent time to get a herd health management plan in place and start a vaccination program. So why do we need a herd health management program through Cervid Solutions? Well, number one, it's custom to your farm. And what that means is basically you and I do some herd history. Maybe we'll bring your vet in, we'll get on a call together, and we'll discuss some of the issues that you've been having or have had in the past and develop a plan that will work for you. Those will be management techniques, whether that be pasture management. The vaccine program obviously is a big play. We talk about social stresses and all the things that we need to do to really help manage your animals in a safe and ethical manner. But we want those guys to be as healthy as possible. Bringing your vet into the fold is another great way to build some confidence in your relationship with your vet, and show them that you're serious about your animals and taking care of your farm. They have some great insights that we as general practitioners and managers of let's say whitetail in this case, or elk, or whatever species you have, they can really benefit by talking about those things, because they have a lot of great technical background, maybe in other animal species. I know we use a lot of large animal vets, whether that be cows or horses or things of that nature that could be small ruminant, veterinarians as well. So we want to bring them into the fold and develop those systems that are really best suited for your region and your farm specifically. Another thing you get to take advantage of is my experience raising whitetail specifically, and the observations that I've made over time that can help you save time and money on your end. So if you appreciate the work that we do here at North American Deer Talk and at Cervid Solutions, feel free to stop by our membership page on Cervid Solutions. It's just CervidSolutions.com. Sign up to be a CSM or a Cervid Solutions member. There's two ways to do that. One's a $5.99 per month charge. The other one's $60 for a year. You get to save a bunch of money on discounts that we offer through a bunch of our vendors, etc. And you can get going on your herd health management program. I just want to give you a quick farm update here on some of the things we have going on at Red Ridge Whitetails. We've got our ranch bucks moved out. They're all stocked for the year at various locations. It was a really good year for us. I think our average was as high as it's ever been. So I believe that market is solid. I think the time that we've spent developing those relationships with ranches around the country and having just really top quality animals is paying dividends now, because you know, the guys out there that are you know, maybe in a bind, or they have to sell their animals right now, maybe they need feed bills paid, they're just a little anxious or apprehensive about you know, the coming times, et cetera. And they're worried that they maybe need some more pen space, et cetera. They're actually end up losing money. I don't know if they know it or not, but, you know, you have to have a pretty specific management plan, in place be able to hold these animals until, later in the year, or have some early season stocking programs. So it's worth putting in the extra time up front. You know, I think here's a good tip. Instead of trying to just maybe move some bucks in the fall months, when the hunting ranches are incredibly busy, it's worthwhile in the springtime, or even in the winter, call some of the hunting ranches up, set up a meeting or an appointment with them, go to their place, have them show you around, look at some of their inventories of holdover stock and breeding stock, etc. And just ask them what they're looking for, how their hunting season was. Try to develop a personal relationship. Take them out for lunch, or dinner, or have a cup of coffee with them, and just, you know, get to know these guys. It's really important. They'll appreciate it, and they're not going to be, you know, tied up trying to make a living during their peak time of year. You know, they have some downtime in the winter, and they're relaxing after maybe a long season of doing hunts. So it's just a good tip. I think it'll pay dividends, and it may take you a while to develop that relationship, but you know, at least you know where your market's at instead of guessing. So give that a whirl. In addition to that, I do want to talk about antler infections, and that's something that we all have to deal with, you know, over time. If you haven't dealt with antler infections yet, you probably will. It's just part of raising cervids, and, you know, animals do need attention sometimes. But this summer in particular was, excuse me, was kind of tough for us. I did have, I don't know, maybe four or five bucks that, during the normal, you know, shedding time, started to shed out, and they stopped. And I really don't know why. Maybe it was the weather. Maybe they didn't feel like rubbing out anymore. I'm not sure, but basically, you know, I'd come, I'd do my chores. You know, feeding's an excellent time to monitor your animals, and we take a pretty close look at everybody each day. And they would start, you know, peeling the velvet off the tops of their tines, and they'd stop, and I'd say, okay, you know, no big deal. Come in the next day, and there might be a little bit more there, or the velvet was starting to dry up a bit more. But they never seemed to finish polishing out. And it was, I really don't know why they were doing it, but we ended up, I had to knock down, you know, a few animals. And basically what we were doing was we were helping get that velvet off. And these aren't by any means, you know, huge non-typicals that, you know, can't get in. Some of these deer were just, you know, beautiful typical bucks, and they started shedding out and just not finishing. So we'd go ahead and we'd immobilize them. And we found that one of the easiest ways to take velvet off is to take a scalpel and just score the main beam with a scalpel, you know, a thin line through the velvet on the main beam, and then run up each tine on the inside and the outside of the tine. And then we take a pressure washer and we just pressure wash the velvet off. Now you can do it a couple different ways. You can take a, you know, a hemostat or a set of pliers or any of those things and get a little spot started and grab onto it and start pulling, and that's all well and good. But the pressure washer makes short work of taking that stuff off. It can get a little messy. You get some blowback from the water shooting on you, but it gets that velvet off in pretty quick order. And we really just want to make sure that those animals get cleaned up and back on their feet. So the pressure washer is really a great option for you to do that. Now, with all that said, I had to do that on, I think two or three animals. We did have some animals that were hard antler. The antlers were cast. They seemed normal to my eyes, and they still had velvet on there, but there were fly eggs and maggots in there. And it wasn't so much that the maggots were creating issues with the deer, because the deer seemed fine. They seemed a little annoyed that the velvet was still on there, but they just weren't shedding it off. So we'd get those off, you know, we'd give them some, just a general antibiotic, some wormer, vitamins, fluids, et cetera, the normal things that we would give, for an animal that we've immobilized to help them with that. And just in the past, I'd say week or two, so this would have been, you know, a month ago, something like that, we started noticing that one or two of those animals was in a kind of an odd state. You know, they'd separate themselves from the other animals, or we'd notice some odd ear position where their one ear might be down a little bit. And, you know, sometimes with the ear position as an indicator, it's kind of odd, because you'll have an animal and it'll start shedding its velvet out. And, you know, I think during those couple days when they're getting that velvet off, they have a pretty large hormone change, or their demeanor changes anyway, and it almost looks like they mean business. So when I see that ear down or something, it doesn't so much concern me, but it is something to look at. I think the biggest thing that we did see was a separation from the other animals, and they were doing things kind of out of sorts. So their activities were typically outside the group, and at least at, you know, end of August, beginning of September, excuse me, the activities are still well within the group. They are, again, you know, they're herd animals. So, usually if, you know, one or two get up and eat, the rest of them come over to the feeders. So if you see animals, separated off over to the side, maybe laying by themselves or not getting up as much as they should, you know, take a good hard look at them. Even if you don't see those overt outside physical signs of something being wrong, you know, look them over, watch them for 20 minutes or a half hour, get them up, make sure they're not limping or anything along those lines. So we had one animal in particular, seemed to have shed out quite well on the top set of his antlers. did not shed from basically just above the G1s down. Now, he did have multiple G1s, but there was a fair amount of velvet there. And he started to kind of separate himself. You know, I'd have, you know, 15 bucks up at the feeder, and, you know, there's 16 in that pen, and he'd be laying in the back, and I'd look at him, and, you know, that went on for maybe a day and a half, and I said, something's not right. So ended up, dart, you know, got him up, and, you know, he was walking a little off. I darted him and got my hands on him, you know, cleaned up the velvet. There were, you know, the velvet was mostly dry, and he had a few maggots that had just set in right underneath the burr of the antler. So the area where the antler comes out of the head and creates creates the antler. So the most outer round part of the base of the antler, the crown. And there was some slight inflammation right in front of the one antler. Got that cleaned up, did some Catron 4. If you're ever dealing with maggots in the antlers, the Catron 4 is a tremendous, fly spray. Basically, I just call it a maggot killer because it'll make those guys squirm, and it gets in all the cracks and crevice. A little betadine scrub, some alcohol, and then we did take the antlers off. Unfortunately, there must have been something else going on, and I have that animal currently being necropsied. If I had to guess, and again, it's just a guess, I'm thinking some sort of meningitis, because there was some neurological signs on the reversal that I haven't seen before. So basically, I reversed that animal, and almost immediately there was increased respiration. So the animal started breathing real heavy. It started to gas up as far as bloating goes in the body, and it really never came out of the immobilization the way I had liked it. Now, I was using commonly used knockdown combination of drugs. I was using BAM. Typically, from what I've seen, BAM has been almost flawless in its ability to put animals down and then reverse them in short order. Long story short, I gave a little bit more reverser. The animal really never came around. So I actually had to, as it was progressing in the time from when I reversed it, the respiration really never went down, and the bloating continued to increase. And, you know, bloating is just not good with a ruminant animal. So I had to take a 3-inch needle and go behind the rib into the stomach area and actually physically, vent that animal off, the gases in there. And anyway, the animal didn't pull through. So we have that down, at the lab. It's going to get tested. We'll guess right now what we thought it was. I think it was potentially some meningitis. But it was just, a tough deal to deal with. So, long story short, make sure you look at these guys. If you have any issues with bucks shedding out, regardless of how small or how big you think it is, it's worthwhile getting a closer look at them. Maybe you can get them into a chute, give them a physical exam without having to immobilize them chemically. That's always a good option. If you don't have that option, certainly a dart's the way to go. So with that said, we'll move on to the main topic. It's going to be a fairly short topic. Most of these, I'm just going to rattle off some stuff for you off the top of my head. But we're going to talk about AI work and semen, and some of the benefits and the things that we do here for our program. And we'll get right into it. So, to sex or not to sex, that seems to be more and more a topic that's on a lot of guys' minds, and for me personally here, we have our numbers in a way that I can't see any other way around not using sex semen. So we have incorporated that into our program the past 2 years. I think it's a great tool. We do want to see a little bit higher conception rates, but I think that's part of learning any new type of management program. So I think at least in the northern market anyway, and I'm not speaking for some of the more individually or localized markets, whether that be Florida, Louisiana, Texas, not saying it's not maybe a big part of your models there, but as far as the breeding market standpoint, it doesn't quite make the same sense to have as many females on your farm anymore with prices as they are. So sex semen, I think, can be a very valuable tool in that respect. How do we acquire sex semen? Well, there's a few different options for us to do that. One would be to buy semen from another party, and we've done that. We've had good success with it. We've had some semen that's been, okay, not so great. And it really takes a little bit more homework, I think, than conventional because of the process that it goes through. And we'll get into that in a second. So when you're looking for sex semen, your options are a little bit more limited as far as what bucks you can choose from. But when doing that, we want to pick male animals that have the traits that we're looking for. So that would be body conformation and antler conformation. So maybe we're into width, so we want to look for a wide buck. Maybe we like long tines, we look for something with long tines. Maybe we like massive bucks. Those are all options. We decided that we like all those things in our deer, and we've only used three different main herd sires, and one of those would be Savage Nation. He's a Midnight Ranger son. We used him two years ago, and he's just a phenomenal typical frame deer. I think he was a 9x10, had big long tines, 28, 30 inches wide, just a phenomenal deer, and he fits right in with our genetics real nicely. So have a couple yearlings out of him. They look good. We're waiting, give them some age, and they should be pretty phenomenal. So we've used him. We've also used a bit of Arty semen from Fred Huebner's place out at Circle H, and that semen has been excellent. Artie's phenomenal. He's got 30 plus inch beams. He's 30 some inches wide. He's got 60 plus inches of mass. He's got 15 inch tines. Fred told me a great stat on him. What'd he say? He was a 201 six pointer. Yeah, a 201 six pointer. I think his 5x5 score was 256, something like that, something crazy. Anyway, he fits all the criteria for our program, and he was a huge deer. I think he was 376 pounds come October or something like that. But that semen's good stuff. I don't know if Fred has too much more there. We bought quite a bit from him this fall for our place and for a few others. So I know there's going to be even more Artie sons coming out there that are just going to be phenomenal. So that was something that's worked out good for us, and we're gonna use a bunch more this year again. We also have the option of collecting one of our own bucks. So maybe the thought of spending $1,000 or $1,500 a straw on sex semen that you can only breed one doe with doesn't really suit you. And I'll be honest with you, it doesn't suit me. I can't justify the numbers at $1,500 a straw, even at $1,000 a straw. And I'm not saying that people that have sex semen priced at $1,000 a straw is not worth it. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying for my farm, I can't make those numbers work as well as I want. Now, we all know that it takes one phenomenal buck to change everything on a farm. But as far as the percentages go, it's incredibly hard to make that deer. Now, people have different doe herds. They have more, or they have different genetics that may be more marketable in the industry. Who knows? But you know, for me, I like to stay under that 750 number. That seems to be a good place to start. If I can get my conception rate up in that 60-80% range, that's pretty awesome. We did about 62, something like that, 60-66. I think that was our conception rate on our sex semen last year. And we'll keep trying different things till we can get that up with our conventional, which has been consistently in the 70s for, oh, I don't know, almost 10 years. So, but we can collect one of our own bucks. And the advantage of doing that is, number one, maybe we're working within our own genetic line on a particular animal. And for us, we have quite a bit of Maxbow Ranger stock, Maxbow stock, whatever, Max stock, however you want to phrase it. But and we have quite a bit of fleece animals and some Patrick and so on and so forth. But we have a buck named Hard Times, and we collected him last year. Now, there's been some changes in the pricing model at the sexing facility, and pretty much the only place to get semen sexed is at Sexing Technologies, and they're in Navasoto, Texas, I believe, something like that. They're in Texas, and basically how the processed worked in the past is you would send them a collection. They have some minimums, and there's some specifics with how the semen needs to be handled and packed, etc. But you'd send your semen down there, they'd run it through their machine, and they'd send you back your sex semen. Now, you had basically a flat fee that you paid, and you would get X amount of straws back, whatever that would be. And you could basically, you know, you could get 100 straws of sex semen for that flat fee if you had a really good collection, which was great because it lowers your cost per straw, and it allows you a little bit of flexibility as far as your profit margin if you're selling that. I mean, we're not here to give anything away to somebody. I mean, we're all in a business, and you know, it's flattering if people want to use some of your animals and your genetics, but at the same time, you know, we all have bills to pay, and you know, we want to be able to make some money. So it was great when we were getting those those bigger collections. Now, this year they've gone to a flat fee at Sexing Technologies, but it's once you get to a certain level of straws, there's a per straw price above and beyond that. So they've basically priced fixed the market to a certain level, which is fine. So we have a set cost per straw, and we know exactly what that is going into the procedure. So you can, and I believe, I want to say the minimum is 25 or 30 straws for their rate. And I think the rate this year is $3,750. So I'll run through the procedure real quickly, and then we can get back into the specifics of the numbers. So basically what you'd want to do, there's two options. You can do frozen semen, which is just like your conventional, or you can do fresh semen. So we'll start with the fresh. Let's say you're AIing on a Wednesday. You would have your normal vet or your local vet, or whoever does your semen collections, come in on a Monday morning to about lunchtime. You would collect your buck. You would package that up into a special cooler. Now, there's some paperwork that you would do prior through Sexing Technologies, and they send you, I believe it's called a Credo Cube. And this Credo Cube has six sides on it, and it's a very specialized cooler. I didn't look how much they were, but they got to be expensive because these things are they're pretty badass looking. They have frozen, basically hard plastic gel packs on the sides, and then they're in a box, and they come with instructions. They send you some extender for your semen, and then you give that to your vet, and your vet takes care of it. So basically, what you would do is you would collect your buck on Monday. You would have your vet add in the semen extender, etc., package it up into this cooler or this Credo cube, and you send that overnight AM delivery to Sexing Technologies. So that would go out. We use FedEx. That seems to be a pretty good, reliable source. They deliver by, I believe, 8 or 8:30 in Texas, and they'll have that semen down there. So when they get the semen, they take it out. They do a quality check on it. They make sure that everything looks good and that it's acceptable when it gets down there to go through their processing method. And basically, they have this machine. They put the semen into it. It runs some calculations. And it basically takes your semen and it puts it through, for lack of a better term, a nozzle. Now, in that nozzle, there is a separator, and that separator takes the male cells, or the male sperm. They're not really cells, because they're not alive, but the male semen, and it spits it off to one side. It takes the female semen, and it spits off to another side. And then it takes all the dead and debris and pushes it right down through the middle. So when the machine process is done, and depending on the quantity of semen that you send, it can take anywhere from, I believe, 4 to 8 hours. I think that's about what machine runtime is. So they have, when it's done, they have male semen on one side, female semen on the other. They take that, and basically they do another quality check on it. They package that back up, and they ship it out on Tuesday for you for AM delivery on Wednesday. So it shows up to your place. Hopefully it shows up at your place. You know, stuff does get, you know, lost or late in the FedEx shipping system. That happens. But it shows up at your place, AM delivery on Wednesday. So you're going to schedule your AI for sometime after noon, 12 o'clock, anywhere, you know, 12 to 6 o'clock on Wednesday. So your does are all ready. And basically you just take your semen out of that Credo cooler, and it's fresh. It has not been frozen. And your vet pulls out X amount of doses and AIs your deer with fresh semen. Now, the advantage to that is there's always semen that is lost in the processing of, or the freezing, excuse me, the freezing process of collections. So, you know, it's hard on the semen basically to take it from cooled down, it'd be refrigerator or so temperature, which would be, you know, 35 to 40 degrees, somewhere in there. I'm not sure the exact specific temperature, but somewhere in that range. And then take it all the way down to minus 196 Celsius, which is liquid nitrogen in our semen tanks. So we skip that process altogether. So we're going to have a healthier, more robust semen, so to speak, without the loss of the extra handling and processing. That's one option. That's a very, I don't want to say it's high stress, but everything has to go right. And it's work for us. So it's not that it can't be done. And I know a lot of guys that, you know, do fresh semen each year. That animal basically has to be on your farm to control all those processes. So you're going to be using one of your bucks to do that, or potentially maybe you're able to purchase a draw from a buck on another farm and have that person process a batch, so to speak, of semen for you. There are a lot of different options when you send down semen to process some fresh, do some frozen, etc., and we'll talk about that in a second. So your second option is to do frozen semen. Now, the frozen semen is basically the same as any conventional type collection at your place. So you would, again, have your regional local vet come out, do your semen collection, and you send that the same way. You're going to send it overnight AM delivery to Sexing Technologies. They do the same process. Goes into the machine, you know, male on one side, female on the other, debris and deads down through the middle. But this time, they're going to package it up into straws as we know it. So that is going to get frozen. And once that semen is froze, you're not on a time constraint anymore. Now you basically book that machine time, and they're ready for your collection to come in, etc. So those straws can just be shipped in a dry shipper back to you, and you thaw them and use them just as you would regular straws of semen. I believe their standard as far as you know, semen per straw is in that 8 million range, as far as, you know, live viable semen post-thaw. Another thing you can do is, because of the pricing model, if you don't want to get more than 25 straws, which I believe is their minimum on their frozen, I'm not sure how the fresh is this year, but the frozen is 25, you can take your excess straws and you could put those up conventionally, and they have a per straw price on their conventional semen as far as processing, and then you have some conventional semen out of the same collection as well. You could do some fresh doses for your stuff on hand that you're going to AI. You could save some frozen to sell to other people or for future use, etc. So that's the basics of how the sex semen works. And it seems to be a really nice tool for us to create some more males, because we're finding that the, you know, the value is more in these bucks nowadays. So that's the sex semen deal. Now we're going to get into the does and their preparation. So for me, prepping for AI begins the day that I wean my fawns. Now everybody has a different technique in weaning. I'll tell you what we do, and it's successfully worked for us. You can do yours however you want, but this is how we do ours. We started weaning fawns the first week of August, and everybody's like, what? First week of August? I still have fawns on my mom. It's just worked for us. We had our first fawns basically the first week of May, second week of May. Those fawns were 90 days old. We were pulling them off. I like to see, you know, kind of large. We have quite a few large body does, and I like to see those does. I don't want to say like nursed down hard, but I want to see, you know, nice robust fawns with, you know, pretty good meat on them, maybe good body conformation, whatever their genetics say they should be. And I want to see mom, you know, kind of a little more bony and those fat reserves from winter and whatever she's built up over summer and nursed off of her, basically. So we weaned those. Now, I weaned all my other fawns at 65 days old. So we were fortunate this year. Most of our fawns came within a month time period. Those fawns are all doing fine. They seem to handle that just fine. Their rumens are working good at eight weeks old. No issues at all. Now, all the moms are basically on the same schedule. Now, once those fawns are away from their moms, you know, they're vaccinated. They go into a separate pen. We're feeding those as normal. The adult does, and this is just a little way to save a little bit of money and have some real solid success with your AI program. I feel that a lot of our does are over conditioned because of the high quality of the feed that we put into them. So deer generally are not meant to eat the concentrations of of grain that we give them. They perform exceptionally well on it, but their bodies aren't conditioned for that. It's the same thing with cows. Their bodies are not made for that. We still feed them that stuff anyway. They're food animals and, you know, are deer food animals too. So with that said, I take them and I give them a ration of feed instead of feeding them free choice. Everybody else is getting free choice feed. But I ration their feed and they eat all the good clovers and alfalfa and, you know, fresh buds and tree limbs, etc., from our pastures. Now, the ration that I use is anywhere from 2 to 3 pounds per day. Now, a doe in those times will eat, depending on her size. We're talking, you know, northern animals in Pennsylvania, and I got some big does that are 190+ pounds. That 2 to 3 pounds, number one, keeps them hungry, but it also keeps them eating all that good vegetation, which is excellent for the rumen. It's got good fiber contents. The protein's starting to mellow out down from the, you know, the high 20s, probably into the high teens, low 20s towards the end of summer. It's a good balanced diet. My does right now, you couldn't tell that I did that to them. They have very adequate conditioning to them. Now, we're just coming up on our 30-day prior to AI time frame. That's going to start here, 2 days. Those does are then going to go onto a free choice feed ration. And I'm going to give them as much as they want to eat. And this is similar to a flushing program. And when I say flushing, I mean basically, it's I don't want to say starving the animal, because that's not the right word, but we're rationing the animal, and then we're giving it all the feed it wants to eat, and we're helping bump up that immune system, health system, nutritional quantities in their body, etc. So these does are going to start really packing on the weight. And it doesn't take long for them to convert feed into body mass and fat. They do it exceptionally well, especially from the high quality feed we feed them. We use the MaxRax feed. You know, if you want to learn more about that, you can go over to MaxRax feed, or go over to the CNE Wildlife. They're a sponsor of the show. Shane will take care of you. He's got an awesome feed program he can set you up on. But the animals are then on an upward swing as far as their health condition when we go to AI. This will help increase conception rates and ovulation, semen production, all the above, on everything that we're dealing with. So, and I have almost a 2-month window where my feed cost on my does is cut in half. So depending on your herd size, you could be saving in thousands of dollars worth of food. So that's important, because guess what? Your bottom line matters at the end of the year. So that's a good little tip on saving a little bit of cash, conditioning your does, I think, in a proper manner, and you know, hopefully boosting up some conception rates and giving you better, you know, healthier fawns when they're born. Cedar in, cedar out times. There's no science to this matter. There are guys that do 19-day cedar cycles. So what is a cedar cycle? Well, cedar cycle is how long your cedars are in. So on day one, you put a cedar in. On day whatever, 19, you take your cedar out. You can do anywhere from, I've done as short as 10, and I've done as long as 19. 14 days seems to be your norm. That's what most guys do. And that works just fine. There are some there's some bodies of work that they have alternate schedules. On some of the longer cedar cycles, there's guys that are putting a new cedar in. There's also, you know, ones where, you know, they're extending some of their times by having the 2 day cycle, or excuse me, the 2 day cycle, the two seeder cycle. We don't do that. We just do a single seeder, as we try not to handle those animals and create stress on them any more than we have to. Our deer seem to work through the barn really nice. So, we don't really think about it in that respect, but it does cause some more stress on them. So if we don't have to run them in the barn, we don't. We do use a handling facility when we do that. That's highly recommended. If you are forced to use a dart gun, I'm sorry. You know, it's worth investing the money into a handling facility. It really is. If you figure out your time, the stress on the animals, the darts, and the med cost, you can build a makeshift handling facility within a year or two. Easy. So that's something to consider. But so you put your seeders in on day one, and you're going to remove them on day 14. Now, this year we have to do it a little longer because I'm going to be traveling. I'm going to be doing a 16-day seeder cycle this year. I'm not worried about it. I'm not stressing about it. Everything's going to be fine. Our conception rate's going to be the same as it's always been, or at least I hope so. Knocking on wood there. But I'm not stressing out over it. Again, it's not a science. We are going to pull those seeders, and on our animals that we are going to be AIing with sex semen, we're going to try to be in that 58 to 62 hours post seeder removal. So we're going to pull that seeder, and then we're going to breed those animals laparoscopically AI with one single straw of sex semen 58 to 62 hours later. We want to go a little bit later as far as their timing to help with, we want to make sure that they're in heat. Now, I found that if a doe is consistently in heat, and you put semen in her, most of the time she's going to take. There are some does and genetic lines that just, they are solid, consistent AI fawn producers. There are some lines that aren't. We have a doe or two, they don't get AI'd anymore. You know, did them twice, done them three times. It's not worth going through the process. They give me good, healthy fawns live breeding wise. So we'll use them like that. But 58 to 62 hours on the sex semen. The conventional semen, we have a much larger range. And the reason for that is I believe that the quality and longevity of the conventional semen is a bit better than the sex semen. Now, why do I say that? The sex semen, though it was once quote unquote conventional, wasn't separated, male and female, has not been spit through a machine, which is, regardless of what anybody tells you, is a stressful process on that semen. That semen does get beat up. Those are proteins. They can start bonding together, called agulation, and it may or may not affect the semen quality or your conception rates. It's just a personal thing. I think that conventional semen's got a little more pop. And I think it right now anyway, with our seeder cycles, et cetera, and our management practices that we're doing, it's just a little bit better. So, anyway, I've AI'd as early as, 40, I think it was 47 or 48 hours conception. I have AI'd as late as like 70 hours, something like that. Conception. So again, there's a wide range of time, but we found that 55, 56 hours, that's kind of our magic time. That's our magic zone. So we seem to work well in that range. I know a lot of other people do too, but your general consensus is 54 to 62. So as long as you're hitting inside those times and, you know, you're handling your animal's properly and they're in a relatively, you know, low stress environment, you know, your cortisol levels are down, everything's good. You know, you're not getting these guys all worked up before the procedure. You'll have pretty decent conception. Also, please request that your vets look at the semen before they AI animals. I know there's a lot of vets out there that, or AI technicians, whatever, that they thaw a straw of semen, they just put it in the dough, and they're not giving you an evaluation on that semen. I think that's foolish, very, very foolish. You are paying, as a producer, you are paying good money, and I'm not trying to tell the vets what to do. I am trying to let you guys know that you're paying those bills. So, you know, when a vet comes in and they're typically not doing that, and you're paying, you know, $250 a piece to get your dose AI'd or whatever your cost is, just say, hey, look at the semen for me. I'd like an evaluation. Yeah, it may take a little bit more time, but if you thaw that straw out and all that semen's dead in there and you AI that dough, and then you split the straw, I don't know, two or three times, and you AI a bunch of other doughs, you don't get any conception, well, how do you know the semen was good? I know there's cases where, you know, thaw a straw of semen, it won't look great. It's in, you know, freeze shock, even though it's been brought up to, you know, 35 or 37 degrees Celsius. Sometimes it needs 20 minutes or an hour on the stage, of the microscope. And you might look at it then and boom, the stuff's just flying all over the place. Well, that's great. But again, you're foolish if you don't ask your vet to at least look at the stuff and say, is it alive or dead? There's nothing worse than going through the whole process of AI, picking out your does, making the genetic crosses, buying the straw semen, doing the cedar work, you know, getting them in the barn, just going through the whole process, prepping those does, doing a albeit minor surgery, but a surgery nonetheless on those animals. What the heck? Just look at the semen. So again, request that you're paying the bill. Some of these bills, you know, if you're doing 100 does, you do the math, you know, you're spending, you know, 20, 30 grand on a vet coming in for a day or two and doing all that work. Just check the semen out. So it'll give you peace of mind at the end. Keep good notes, ask for your vet to, you know, tell you what they got. If they're looking at these does, you know, ask them for the follicle stimulation, which is basically the action on the ovaries themselves. Just basically, if you look at the two ovaries, they're going to look like two little white balls. And on those balls, there's going to be what looks like irritation. It'll be little red marks, and they'll be different sizes. And that's basically the... where the ovary has opened up, the egg has potentially come out already, which would be a what they call a CH, which is a recent ovulation, fresh, or maybe a CL, which is one that's closing back up, or potentially, you know, a vascular follicle or whatever. So they have different ratings. If they're looking at those, great. If not, no big deal. But at a minimum, have them look at the semen. We have a couple different drug options that we can use. I would ask your vet specifically what they recommend. We've used pretty much everything from xylazine, tiazole to BAM to MK. All work well. I will not use xylazine, tiazole anymore when we have resources like MK, metatomidine, ketamine, and BAM, which is butorphanol, azapram, metatomidine. There's no need to. So, again, ask your vet, see what works well for you. It's important that, you have a good plan going into it. Make sure you have, you know, extra fluids, vitamins, all the stuff you need, and have a successful AI season. So with that, we're going to wrap up the show. I just rambled on for about an hour about some AI work, but hopefully that sheds a little bit of light on some of the things we do here. Maybe it gives you a tip or two on what works, and we always appreciate your comments and feedback on the show. Again, if you appreciate the work we do here, head over to servantsolutions.com. Sign up for our membership program. We certainly appreciate you. And until next time, stay tuned for another episode of North American Deer Talk.